-3 is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. Must be 21 or older.
-3 with Dave Dameshek.
Hi, hello, happy Thanksgiving, happy Shecker season. Welcome to -3, presented as ever by Omaha. We're ready to roll here. I'm sure you are too. Into some pie, into some gravy, most importantly, into some stuffing. Some quick notes for you on this Thanksgiving week here at -3 to give you the lay of the land here. Me, Kevin Hench, Eddie Spaghetti, you're about to listen to us kibitz about this, that, and the other, about the world of sports for a few minutes here. We're also going to have a Thanksgiving special 3-minute pregame show for you covering the trio of Thanksgiving games. We'll also have our usual 15-minute NFL pregame show. We'll also give you a Michigan Ohio State pick in there as well. That'll post at its usual time, 4 p.m. Eastern on Black Friday. So we have you covered, but this is going to be our one and only proper full -3 episode. We appreciate you checking it out and making time for us even during Turkey Week here. Like I say, it's Shecker season 2. That's when all good things start happening. Less work, more booze, more pie, lots and lots of football. Let's talk about it with our guy, Kevin Hench, and Eddie Spaghetti there behind the glass. Hench, how are you? How was the football weekend, the sports weekend at large for you?
Well, first of all, happy Thanksgiving, and so much to be thankful for me and Spaghetti. Not so much for you. See, Spaghetti and I are thankful because our football teams, the Patriots and Giants, are so bad that our year cannot be ruined by the officiating. Like, we're not going to be, you know, a terrible call is not going to cost the Patriots a spot in the playoffs. But I did this thing on Sunday, which was, I think, really smart, which, you know, they don't talk about this in, when you're in recovery. Like, recovery is like hardcore. Like, if you drink a bottle of Jack Daniels every day, you can't dial that back to half a bottle every day. But that's kind of what I did on Sunday. Like, I didn't do my usual 10 hours of football. I did about 5 hours of football. I was picking and choosing. But what was hilarious is anytime I popped in on a game, there was a terrible call immediately to remind me that this will never change. And you know, I was thinking about, you know, we've had arguments about the hockey officials swallowing the whistle and making sure the players decide the game in the third period of a playoff game. And then, you know, one of the things NBA officials do that I actually like, I think drives the players nuts, is like, on a breakaway, there's a lot of contact. The ref waits to see if the guy made the basket to see if the contact impacted the play. And then if it rolls off the rim, he gives you that late whistle, 2 free throws, because obviously the contact is why the guy missed the layup. I like that. I like the officials saying, I don't want to decide the game. NFL, exactly the opposite. We do want to.
I told you, by the way, I don't want to interrupt your rant, but I mentioned it, I think, a week or two ago. I caught Gene Steratore on the radio with our guys Bauman and Crawford in Pittsburgh, and he said, you don't need to make the call. You don't need to make every call. Just make the calls that impact plays, basically, exactly. is what he's so, getting so, at. That's you know, absolutely
what
right.
What the NBA does, right, if you dribble yourself into a cul-de-sac where you are in a triple team with the shot clock running down, and then you kind of throw your body into guys, what NBA refs do, and I can't believe I'm complimenting NBA refs. That's how bad the NFL officiating is. I'm showing NBA officiating as excellent compared to the NFL refs. What NBA refs do is they're like, hey, buddy, you're going to have to be violently assaulted for us to give you 2 free throws because you're in such – you've created such a lousy opportunity. We're not going to bail you out with a whistle. NFL does the exact opposite. Hey, Packers, you've played yourself into 3rd and 20. Well, we are ready to call a ticky-tack. We are ready to call any illegal contact. I mean, you know, Puka Nacua is running across the end zone. He trips over his own feet as Stafford floats a ball to nowhere. I mean, it's a non-play. It is the NFL equivalent of a guy throwing his arms and legs into a triple team in the NBA. And in the NFL, we are always looking to bail you out. There's a little illegal contact away from the play. There's incidental contact, like the NFL. And so it's like, why can't to is it Sterator or Sterator? Are you doing a joke?
I thought it was Gene Sterator. No,
no, I thought it was
Sterator. Did they call him Gene Sterator?
Yeah,
I can never tell.
You said it last week too. I didn't want to correct it. I don't like.
I thought he was doing a bit. I think it's Sterator. Okay. Anyway, but to his point, would it be so hard?
But then again, people don't get most of my bits, so I guess.
Would it be so hard in training camp to just go, "Hey, man, swallow your whistle, keep your flag dry, don't decide the outcome of the game"? I mean, you can give it that half a beat, like in the Colts Browns game earlier. Just wait a half a second and see if the quarterback is getting sacked while if the illegal contact is what prevents the receiver from breaking open and the quarterback throwing it. But like if the quarterback is being swallowed by five guys while your guy is touching the receiver at 6.5 yards, don't decide the game. It's not that hard anyway. So very thankful that my Patriots will not be cost a playoff spot in week 18 by a
that
terrible
was a
ball.
Lovely sentiment.
The Steelers will be right there on the bubble in the final week of the season. And they'll probably get the call because they're the luckiest team in football, but even their luck couldn't drag them.
Your wife and two girls are going to love that. That's going to be really powerful at the Thanksgiving table. When you repeat what you just said to us, that's going to be, what am I thankful for? The referee rant.
I'll go last.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Thank you, girls.
I do think that of course, you're right. I appreciate, all the listeners out there, more and more with each passing week, Hench is the voice of vexed sports fans because of the refereeing. People continue to drop us a line on all that. It's great stuff. I do also want to shout out very quickly, Hench, we're thankful for you this holiday season, and so is the television audience, the streaming audience. Santa Claus is promoted prominently in a number of places. If you want to support Kevin Hench, go watch Santa Claus is one of his many, many Hollywood showbiz productions there. So
horrible officiating in that entire series.
Let me squeeze in a quick break here. You know, when the conversation turns tampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. OmahaFull. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Spaghetti is feeling good. He got a win from Tommy DeVito. Interested where the Giants fan factors into all this, what the emotions are. I have to say very quickly as we get into our goat and goats here this week, examining the spectrum of greatness and putridity. Is that a word, Hench? Putridity? Sure. That seems like that would be okay.
Territory is not a word, but
no, indeed. I went with that anyway. So I guess, yeah, I'm on a roll. What's going on? My conclusion about what you just touched on there, the Pittsburgh Steelers and how unwatchable they are and everything else, they're 6-4 and they're in the playoff mix, but it is undeniable at this point, and it breaks my heart that Kenny Pickett, the Pitt kid, as I always said, like, you got to take the shot spiritually, but the down of bringing the Pitt kid across the hallway to the professional locker room, same building. And if it works, it'll be that much sweeter. I feel so bad. My primary emotion as a great empath is I feel really sad for Kenny Pickett. Imagine being that guy right now. I know he's 37 years old. He's not a child, but still, imagine he's been in Pittsburgh and now everybody in the city that he calls home for the last, 8-10 years now, everybody is booing him and saying, please put in Mason Rudolph. It is the all-time example of the backup is the most popular guy in any football town. The calls to put in Mitchell Trubisky. Do you just have amnesia about what Mitchell Trubisky looks like, everybody? That's not going to be the answer. And I have convinced myself, I'm not trying to point fingers in other directions, I think Mason Rudolph would get the job done, which means that I have amnesia too, that we have, it's been so long since we've seen that cat that I've convinced myself, like, he might get it done. I know that the reality of the situation is so unsatisfying on a macro level, but I don't know what they're supposed to do at 6-4. Are they supposed to be making major changes right now when the destination appears to be a wild card slot? I don't know what sense to make of it. I do know that the different football towns have different standards among fan bases and otherwise, because Pittsburgh is on fire right now about what's happening there. And we're 6-4. All right. I am vastly disappointed because of expectations that I had this year. I thought that this was the year they announced themselves on a different level. So far, they have not. There's still 7 games left, but I'm in the mix still, so I'm feeling it. I'm all caught up in my emotions. I'm curious, Eddie Spaghetti, the Giants fans, the Bears fans, whoever else is in the mix for Caleb Williams / Drake May and all of that, how does that Tommy DeVito throwing 3 touchdown passes strike you?
Well, we found our franchise quarterback. So, I mean, Tommy DeVito is the answer, which is great. Local, you know, keep it in Jersey. That's the best thing. Maybe this sounds like I'm like taking it lightly, but I was, you know, talking to my Giants fans friends yesterday, and I was like, I never assumed the Giants would only win. They're not going to end the season with 2 wins. I just thought that there was enough bright spots they would have been, and they own the Commanders. They have been for the last X amount of years. Like, they cannot beat them. The Commanders cannot beat the Giants. So I thought there was a chance they win that. I think there's a chance they could win maybe the Patriots game, or they have a couple games, the Rams, the Packers, like, who knows how those games go.
Do you want them to is the point.
Well, I already kind of programmed myself to being like, the Giants are going to probably pick in the closer to the 10th pick than the first pick. And if they have to move up, if they're dead set, if Shane and Dave are like, we're going to go make a move, we're going to go get May or Caleb Williams, they're going to probably have to just give other assets to move up. The Daniel Jones out in the contract gets a lot easier after next year. Daniel Jones will be on the Giants next year. So he will be on the team. He'll be the highest paid backup in NFL history, or he'll be the starter until they want to put the backup in. So I think the Giants are going to go into the next season with Jones plus a rookie is my guess. I think that if they really are serious about those, the top two guys, they will have to move up. But
to me, like we talked about a week ago or before these games, it seems pretty clear to me that you can't just tank out loud. You can't just say
it's impossible. What else could they do?
We're not going to bench our 15 best players. But what you can do is the same thing as, you know, I just watched I was watching the Ken Burns baseball documentary in the 1919 scandal. It's like, you don't need everybody. You just need a couple key guys. You need the pitcher. If you have if you control the quarterback, you can decide if you win or lose. Tommy DeVito really mucked that up real good. Like, Dexter Lawrence, you're sure playing, man. But Tommy DeVito, we know there are better human beings available, but you give us the sweet spot of like, we're trying everybody and we have a local kid in there. Isn't that a nice story? He stinks and he's not going to win any games. What did you just do to us, Tommy DeVito? Good for you, Spider. You just screwed us. Hench, bring some sense to this conversation. Well, Patriots, first of all, Giants, you want the Patriots to lose this weekend, right?
Well, so that the Patriots can have the number two overall pick and then trade down with Spaghetti Giants at 10.
Right.
Because Belichick's got his eye on an offensive guard that nobody has heard of. Like, it's like, this is the double whammy. It's like, we're going to tank out perfectly. And then Belichick is going to not get a quarterback. But back to the picket of it all, you know, we don't know, you know, the inner workings of these war rooms as they prepare for drafts, right? And when you looked at the Patriots, like, on camera reaction to Mac Jones being available at 15, they were not like pumping their fists like, we can't believe our good fortune. Nothing about their reaction to Mac Jones being available said, I can't believe we pulled this off. Like,
oh, crap. I guess we have to go. You know,
their body language was like, we're going to get killed if we don't take this guy, right? But none of us like him. And I wonder, you know, going back to Marino and Pitt, I wonder if a little bit of that was going on with the Steelers, where it's like, we can't not take him. You know, this has doomed us before. And we, you know, we need to take the local kid.
There is no hench. I am telling you, I have no special insight on this. I don't know what happened. I'm pretty sure Mike Tomlin doesn't care about that nostalgia. I do think that he knew Kenny Pickett and had a different level of comfort with him bouncing off of him in the hallway. Obviously, they're human beings. I wouldn't be surprised if the Rooney's on high, if Art 2 was like, you know what, Dan always was sad that he didn't take Dan Marino. I could see there being that mentioned. I don't think that was the driving force, and I do think that the narrative, I will stand by that forever, that you had to take the shot. And as I always say too, I know everybody likes to say, you set the franchise back. No, you didn't. You don't have to. You just don't have to lean into the sunk costs aspect of it. Like the Patriots with Mac Jones, like, move on from him. If you don't like him, then move on from Mac Jones sooner rather than later. I think that's what they're tracking to do. Do you sense that the Patriots are subtly trying to tank out here a little bit? I do think all this noise about Mac Jones is to blame and all that, it does kind of take the stink off of Belichick to a degree and all other issues on the team. It just makes it all about that QB, and it does push things into the offseason so that you can say, like, yeah, let's solve the QB position. Let's get Drake May or Caleb Williams and we'll be good to go for 2024, right?
Well, it is. It's funny because the Patriots are in the exact same situation at quarterback in terms of the backup becoming this conquering hero.
Right.
And then Bailey Zappe comes in, does the fake spike and throws the ball right to the other team. And he's like, oh, right, he's quite bad too. But the Patriots, because they're pretty, I mean, they're very limited talent wise, but they're also pretty banged up. So it's like tanking it's not, you're not asking anybody to not try. You're asking bad football players to try their hardest and lose, which is going to be hard against the Giants. I will say, if you were starting an investigation into tanking, Mac Jones' throw against the Colts, his 15-yard throw that was underthrown by 12 yards, I think the FBI would be like, we don't think this is possible. It's like when a boxer is holding up the other guy because he's supposed to lose. Like, hey, buddy, I dare you to hit you.
Just take a swing at me, please. Yeah, just one.
Hit me. All right, let's do go and go.
All right, we're into it. I'm trying to address. I don't know the GOAT is in Pittsburgh. I don't know if it's Kenny Pickett or if it's Matt Canada or if it's the fans, if it's the media. I don't know what to do. I just know that I feel sad for Kenny Pickett, which makes me a GOAT, a great human being, for having such empathy despite what Kenny Pickett is doing to my favorite pro football team. All right, Eddie Spaghetti, you want to jump in here? Because I do want to transition into some Caleb Williams talk and what it then means for college football. Obviously, USC out of things, but there are some real heavyweights and some real meat left on the bone to figure out who is going to make this college football Final Four. But go ahead, Eddie Spaghetti, jump in.
I was just trying to make the transition smoother because one of my goats is Tommy DeVito. How could it not be? Obviously, the guy that has his mom doing his laundry, his mom making his dinner, living at home. You know, you're supposed to lose that game. The Giants, like, you know, I'll kind of put this into the tanking mode in a second, but like, you're on the road, you know, that's just going to be the Saquon Barkley show. I can't remember how many times you have to run it with him. And he goes and wins the game after getting smacked around. Like, I mean, breaking the records for amount of sacks in a quarter. And he still had a phenomenal game, 18 of 26, 246 yards, 3 touchdowns, a passer rating of 137. A Giants quarterback has not thrown 3 touchdown passes in a game since December of 2019. That's 4 seasons ago. So I mean, like, to tie it into the tanking conversations, like, wow, I'm very, you know, happy to see him, and the locker room is all fired up and everything. What else are you supposed to do for the Giants? Like, I can't get mad because they're starting their quarterback who never should have seen the field probably in his entire life. You had Jones, you had Tyrod Taylor, both have injuries. You put him in, like, if you start taking out Saquon and Dexter Lawrence and Kayvon Thibodeau, then the league could be like, well, this is not kosher. I don't know what really they could do besides play your practice squad quarterback. And
I think that the thing to remember is what we root for has no ultimate impact, especially when we're on our couch. Maybe your voice, like, go my team, if you're in the stands, maybe that creates a little bit of emotion for the team. But this rooting for, and like we've talked about, everybody in Houston and beyond thought that Lovie Smith screwed the Texans for a generation winning that game. I guess you don't know. And in the meantime, it's a weird spiritual posture to take as a fan of a team to root against them. I don't want to be Pollyanna about it, but it really is weird. Like, what are you supposed to do? Be unhappy that Tommy DeVito, a local kid, just won the game? I know it is probably not great for the future, but it is a strange position to take. And I'm hearing a lot of that again as a Steelers fan. Like, Dave, you don't get it. You're supposed to root against him. They got tank out. They got to go 3-14. Like, all right, that's not going to happen. So I don't know what to tell you that they're never going to be in that spot. Your team is going to be in that spot. And so it's interesting, these last few games.
But it is wild. I mean, it's like, you know, the Bryce Young, CJ Stroud coin flip, but, you know, which obviously the Texans, it fell right into their lap. But, you know, going back to Marino, the sixth quarterback taken in the first round, and then a certain guy who was drafted 199th overall, this idea that if you do get Caleb Williams or Drake May, you're set. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you're doomed. It's like, it just defies all of NFL history. Now, listen, you always think I start with my bad goat when I complain about the officials. That's just evergreen. That's just good morning. That's just hello. How are you? The officiating is terrible.
Playing the hits, but, they call that, yeah, right?
Exactly. So my actual bad goat is Brandon Staley, and by extension, the Bolts. You know, when Tomlin loses, he says, not good enough. Not good enough. Got to do better. that Brandon Staley press conference, like, I know he knows he's nearing the end and he's trying to go in a different direction. Like, he's going to be belligerent. Like, basically what Brandon Staley did after another catastrophic one score loss where there was no way to lose the game, he basically said, it is good enough. Wait, what are you saying? You just lost a game, another game you had no business losing. I'm confident in this team. Why? I wouldn't change a thing. Like, what are these statements? Even my dogs know he's heading to the dog pound. So if you look at the way the Chargers lost that game, so you've got your Keenan Allen, multiple drops at the goal line, Austin Eckler, fumble in the red zone, Asante Samuel, pass interference on 3rd and 20, Quentin Johnston, who I thought was going to be a monster. Like, I could not believe he fell to them. I'm like, oh my God, Herbert to Johnston, just an undroppable ball, perfectly thrown. Like an impossible game to lose. Staley, like, totally within his rights to rip guys, like, to be like, you cannot take that penalty on 3rd and 20. That is a coach killer. That is a career killer. He's like, I like what I'm seeing out there. Like, what are you doing? Like, it's so insane that he got mad at the media. Like, no, you should be as mad as the media. Like, what? How are you losing these games? So Brandon Staley, we won't have him to kick around much longer, obviously. I don't know. I don't know what, you know, college he'll be working at next year. But and then my good goat, real quick. Obviously, it's NFL season. Big slate on Thanksgiving. Big, you know, Friday game. It's going to be great. But just real quick, I know everyone said Victor Wembanyama, rookie of the year. And then if you watch SportsCenter, he looks like he's having this amazing rookie season. Now, what he is doing is a lot. I mean, he's shooting a lot. He's shooting 43% from overall, and he's shooting 28% from three-point land. If you watch highlights, you think he's shooting 70% from three-point land. It's like, yeah, he's not a great three-point shooter. He's shooting 28%. Now, you know who is a great three-point shooter? The guy who should win Rookie of the Year, Chet Holmgren, is shooting 57% from the floor, 46% from three, and 91% from the line.
Is that right?
While putting up 17 and 8 with over 2 blocks a game for a team that was the first team in the West to double-digit wins. So the Thunder are for real. They're 10-4, and Chet Holmgren is the best rookie in the NBA.
I love it. But he counts as a rookie?
Yeah, he was the second favorite below Wembanyama on all the odds.
Oh,
and
man,
I'm sure those odds have slid toward him because he's the real deal. And what's so funny is, like, you know, I remember when Durant came out and I was, you know, still in that kind of old school mindset of like, gosh, man, I don't know if that body translates to the bank, the NBA. Like, can that body? The bodies have only gotten longer and skinnier. Like, how is Chet Holmgren surviving 20 minutes in the NBA? And it's like, yeah, this is length. And somehow 7-1, 7-4, how these guys are coordinated makes no sense. This is human evolution. Like, 7-foot-1 guys can dribble behind their back. What is happening?
It really is wild, and it is the thing I always refer to with that is the Odell Beckham one-handed catch. It's like, it was impossible until somebody did it, and then everybody started. They're like, oh, we're cool with showing off our freak show skills. Like, okay, I'm going to start doing that too. It is a weird thing. Like, oh, you can be 7'3" and shoot the ball from 24, 25 feet. It is wild. I've been, of course, focused in on my plate's full right now, you know, between the Steelers melodrama, the rise of Pitt basketball is looking really good, college basketball underway, all those Maui tournaments and New York City and everything else going on. My pals from Indiana were up in MSG on Sunday night watching UConn whip the Hoosiers, all that kind of stuff. But of course, I'm also trying to get the Penguins out of their bad start, and we're doing good work here. You know, 71's turning it on, and Chris Letang and Eric Carlson, but Sidney Crosby is rising up the scoreboard in terms of what is he now? 5 points back of your guy, the bread man, Panarin, Eddie Spaghetti. This with Connor McDavid struggling as he is, he's still plus 275 to win the Hart Trophy, the MVP. Get off of that, everybody. Sprinkle a little something. If you want to do even Spaghetti's guy, the bread man right now, I'll speak nicely. 12, don't shake your head. What am I?
I just don't think him? Crosby is 13th right now. He's tied with 13th, 22 points. I just don't see a path.
But how far back is he? But he's
six points in the back, like the top.
People want to do something like that, Spaghetti. Don't you see? This is, it's not about the raw numbers. People want to pay homage to this, to this guy. I know you don't like him. People want to honor guys late in their career. Look at Academy Awards, how they're distributed. Scorsese's best picture isn't the one that won the Oscar, but they're like, hey, we don't know how many more bites at this apple we're going to get to honor the old man. I think the same thing is legitimately true, but the Pens have to rise up a little bit. I say have some fun. Sprinkle a little something. 50-1 on the best hockey player of the millennium, I think, is worth the roll of the dice. If you want to go bread, man, do that. 12-1. Either way, Connor McDavid ain't getting it this year. His team may not even make the playoffs. It's outrageous how bad they are. But Eddie Spaghetti, take it away. You're goat and goat.
Well, I gave the good goat, and this is a perfect segue. So DeVito got the good goat. The bad goat is a hockey one. I'll make it quick because I know that Hench is going to get upset about it. But I, you know, so speaking of, you know, players and whatever, Crosby has a tie into this with Jacob Trouba. But I've poo-pooed the recent hockey fans here who of late, like, hits that are clean and everyone would celebrate them in the 90s and even the early 2000s. Now hockey players have gotten soft, our hockey fans have gotten soft, and we've really not loved the physicality of the game. They want it to be more of like the women's style where checking is illegal. Every check you see, you have somebody now on the other team attack the player, even if it was a clean check. So fans now are just programmed that every big hit they think is illegal, and that's just not true. That's not the way the game is you know, refereed. So the Rangers had a fantastic victory over the Devils. Jack Hughes did return. He did score. Rangers won the game 5-3, but Jacob Trouba had probably the cleanest, toughest, hardest hit I've seen all season long on Tomas Nozick. His head was down in front of the net skating there. Clean hit from Trouba. Everyone celebrates it. And then we see now Devils fans on Twitter and Reddit and what have you are literally asking for him to be like killed, like death threats. He has actual death threats against him for a clean hit. And for the first time I've seen in years in hockey, that no other Devils player attacked Trouba because they knew it was a clean hit. It was a clean hit. And everyone agreed that's in hockey media and whatever, like clean hit, like did not leave his feet, whatever. No shoulder, no head hunting. It was a clean hard nose hit. Trouba's been having a fantastic season, logging over 20 minutes of ice time a game. So clean hit, even the player wasn't upset about it. And then you have Devils fans, obviously they're salty over the loss. And I'm just so tired time and time again of just every hockey fan. Every time there's a hit, if something doesn't go your way, it's he's a dirty player. He's not. He's not a Matt Cook kind of rat scrub who's just trying to
call. He's thrown some elbows. You know he has. But listen, I hear you. Send him to Scott Stevens on Eric Lindros hit and let him see if that's a dirty hit.
If the year was 2003, everyone would be like, this guy is the best. I want him on my team. He's a tough enforcer, but he still plays great defense. He's like, and it's just.
I didn't like Scott Stevens back then either. I thought he was
32. Gets celebrated. Everyone loves Scott Stevens. And now Trouba has this thing where it's like he does something, he does anything on the ice, it's automatically a negative. And this is the first time the hit, the main opinion, the majority opinion was like, good, clean hit. And then now you still have Devils fans who are like, I wish he was dead. They literally said the guy that obviously involved the incident with the Adam Johnson thing, they said, could he play one more game versus the Rangers? This is the kind of stuff that's coming out versus a guy for making a clean hit. So, I mean, hockey fans just lost their mind. So that was an easy bad go for me. And, I'll touch on that, the Hart Trophy stuff too. I mean, with Cale Makar and even like Jack Hughes, who missed a month or basically, and is still like in the mix for top points in the league. And with Pasternak and Panarin up there too, I just don't see a path for Crosby with too many big name guys above him. That's just my take.
I hear you. Listen, I'm saying have some fun. This is a fun bet. That's all the category is there. I'm saying he's having a and he's turning it on. It's if these were his number, I'm saying in the last fortnight, he has been the best player in hockey for what that matters, unless the bread man has been. Hench, well, go ahead. I know you have some important thoughts here.
I'm reeling because I'm learning, learning from that. My partner's here. Damashek doesn't know how to pronounce Steratore and Eddie Spaghetti doesn't know what real quick means. He goes, hey, real quick, I'm going to do my bad goat real quick. Then he cites, ironically, he cites Trouba's over 20 minutes of ice time a game while taking 20 minutes to explain his bad goat. Like, he managed to get in like Jack Hughes's return to the lineup. He's quoting actual death threats. Like, that was the slowest real quick. I know Hench doesn't want to talk about hockey. By the way, as you guys know, I'll talk about hockey for 5 hours when we're off the air. I like Sheck's MVP pick, because once you remove McDavid, you are going to start looking at 200-foot players, and Crosby obviously fits the bill, but that was hysterical. Hey, real quick, sit down for 25 minutes while I talk about the great Jacob Trouba.
Hey, Cale Makar is going to win the Norris, so you don't have to worry about him. Eh, maybe he'll get the MVP. All right, listen, college football, I am interested in the Caleb Williams stuff. I saw Ian Rappaport weighing in. It's funny, like, that's not breaking news, isn't exactly a reporter, hence you're a journalism guy as well. How would you define that? It's weird when you issue commentary if your job is reporter, and it's a weird layer to add to the Caleb Williams story that he chose after the UCLA loss not to talk to the media. Then Ian Rappaport weighs in above that in social media saying, like, Joe Burrow, season-ending injury, next day he faced the media. That's the job when you're the face of the franchise. It's like, well, Caleb Williams ain't held to that standard. He's a student athlete. Obviously, I understand he's not your typical student athlete, but still, he's not held to the standard that an NFL quarterback is. Very weird. And it does answer, though, when we talk about, like, why did Bryce Young, not for some, but it wasn't like it was 60-40. Everybody, by the time the draft went down, was like, well, obviously Bryce Young's the guy, and CJ Stroud has some weird stuff going on there. This is how that stuff gets out of hand, is that Caleb Williams is a bad guy. I don't know enough about Caleb Williams to have that, but watch this. It's comments, it's stuff like that that kind of dings a kid unnecessarily. I don't want to get up on Mount Pius about it, but I also feel like that comment puts one up on Mount Pius to say, like, got a long way to go before he's Joe Burrow. Yeah, that's right. That is right. $100 million for one thing. We'll bridge that gap a little bit. Okay, to the college game. Georgia number one, Ohio State, Michigan going to settle their hash. Washington and Oregon presumably have some hash to settle next week. Florida State is interesting, though, because Jordan Travis now out for the year. So what does that do for the Seminoles going forward here? Seminoles laying 6.5 at Florida. Is that a winnable game? Are we prisoners of the moment? Hench, do you remember the Kenyon Martin injury? Of course you do. Number one all season long, a clear number one seed, but then he hurts his knee in the conference tournament and the committee dinged them. Remember, they gave him a 2 seed. They didn't, you know, say like, oh, obviously you're not the same team anymore, so you're out of the tournament. But they're like, we're going to drop you because reality indicates that your best player being out is going to make you a lesser team. What do you think you do here if you're the committee in college football?
Spaghetti, like 10 minutes ago, you did hear Sheck say he wanted my thoughts on like Rappaport's comments. And then waiting for Sheck's question is like you're in some kind of Navy SEAL training, mm-hmm, where you've been blindfolded and tossed out of a helicopter and you don't know when the question is going to come. Like, right. What? I'm like, okay, I'm ready on Caleb Williams. And then now we're talking about Florida State. And like, mm-hmm, when is he going to ask me a question? I don't, right. So
it's like that thing when I put you, I'd give you the air deprivation and then I spin you in that thing real fast. Totally, and then I pull you out. I'm totally like, answer my question.
Right. Ian Rappaport, Caleb Williams, Florida State. I'll answer your non-question with a question.
Okay, good.
Which is like, were there no hip drop tackles when we were growing up? Like this thing, talk about like sports evolution. Like it's like now we see Travis's, you know, obviously the sickening Tim Crumry leg pointing in the wrong direction. And you're like clear hip drop tackle. You know, we saw, was it Logan Wilson, you know, hip dropping everybody on the Ravens, Mark Andrews done for the year. And I'm just like, this was not a part of our childhood, right? We just don't remember Mike Singletary hip dropping. I don't know. Like it's now it's going to be another thing they're going to give these overmatched referees to adjudicate in the moment. You know, it's like horse collar, you know, it's like, now we're going to have another, the hip drop. And that's one where I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how you're supposed to get your weight off the quarterback in midair. And I really don't know how you're supposed to tackle a guy from behind who's, you know, 18 inches from the goal line without doing exactly what Wilson did. Like, you got to get your weight on this guy.
I'm not trying to be obtuse about the tack, because I do know what you're getting at. Not you, what people are talking about when they say that type of tackle, that it is basically, you know, going dead leg, you know, just dropping your weight. It's what you do if you're a receiver on the sideline trying to get it. You dead leg it basically to pull to end all momentum and just drop yourself and drop the guy who you're pulling on. But the nuance of it, to your point, it is, I mean, these dopes are going to figure that out in real time. Come on. They powwow, back to your point where we started here, like when the lead official, when they powwow, it's like, why'd you throw that flag? Like, I got hands to the face over right in front of me. Like, yeah, but that's 30 yards from where the important element of that play just went. Like, that the referee doesn't step in, like, had nothing to do with the result of the play. We're picking up that flag. They never do that. They're going to assess that in the moment. The games will take forever. I mean, it's
going to be bad.
I don't know what the solution. I really don't. But
the idea that you can't review pass interference in the end zone when you can spend a half an hour on the spot. Like, this ball was spotted 6 inches too far forward. We'll get the electron microscope out for that. But the game deciding pass interference in the end zone, yeah, it's nothing we can do. All right.
Okay,
I'm just going to throw out some picks.
Wait a second. Do you put Florida State in if they win out?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I do not.
You know, as somebody who had a great 20-year run when the unheralded backup quarterback went in for the Patriots, you can't just assume that, you know, that they're bad now. You know, so we'll see.
And now a quick break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so
okay, go ahead.
We did the Thanksgiving pod, and it's like it's super. I don't think any of us can find a way to make our picks interesting on Thanksgiving, just given the weird slate of games. So one thing that's kind of interesting is that the three heavy favorites parlayed together bring you down to even money. So it's boring, but
nice.
$100 to win $100 on the Niners, Cowboys, and Lions seems like a pretty good return on those three games. Now, if you're like, wait a second, one of those games is going to be close at the end. One of those games is going to be a one-score game at the end. You're probably thinking maybe Lions, Packers, given the way the Lions played against the Bears. What one of those three games is definitely not going to be a one-score game at the end? Cowboys, Commies.
Cowboys is the one, right? Yeah,
that is a blowout. There is just, I mean, I think we are seeing, you know, the Commies announced we're tanking, and Chase Young is sacking the quarterback for the Niners now, and I think we are finally seeing that the tank message in the locker room has reached a maximum capacity, where the coach knows he's a dead man walking. The team knows that they're not going to win many games going out, and they're going up against a team. The Cowboys, when they're big favorites, as they were against the Panthers and covered easily, when the Cowboys get up, when that ball starts rolling downhill, when Lawrence and Parsons can pin their ears back, you know, Will Bland get his fifth pick six of the season? You know, this is that there's no way that game is close. They're just the physical disparity between the two teams. And I don't think you can even get into the, like, you know, the occasional Thanksgiving, you know, Redskins, Cowboys, 13-3 upset. You know, this is going to be a legitimate contender blowing out a not very good team. And then sprinkle a little money on my boy Chet Holmgren to win Rookie of the Year.
I like that. I was just trying to find the Rookie of the Year odds, and they are down right now on Caesars. But yeah, that's a good pick. And I do, you know, that, bringing things to fruition by imagining them. I feel like the fourth quarter in Big D is going to be consumed by, like, the broadcasters, like, oh, it's a good time, trying to spin, get the turducken ready. Dak's going to have it. Mike is going to have a good time here in Dallas tonight. I absolutely see that game being over by the third quarter, mid third quarter at the latest. The game that's fascinating to me, we cover, by the way, in the Thanksgiving special edition of the pregame show. We pick Michigan, or no, we do that in the 15-minute show, I should say. Sorry. Michigan and Ohio State. That's the biggest game of them all. That one is on Saturday morning, right when we wake up here, 9 a.m. on the West Coast. Before that on Fox, though, you have Oregon State and Oregon. The Ducks giving 13.5 there, the Civil War, all of that. I think the Ducks see the finish line. I don't know if they're going to get screwed. I do think the Florida State factor looms. I think the Ohio State-Michigan game, depending on how that one swings, if it's a decisive victory, it rarely is. I think Oregon still has a shot of getting in there. Obviously, I say that they take care of business and hammer the Beavers to the tune of at least a 17-point victory. I say take the Ducks. Spaghetti, how say you?
I think my favorite college football bet of the week, well, I don't know if you guys saw this, but University of Auburn paid New Mexico State nearly $2 million to come to their campus to play football, and Auburn lost. They lost 31-10. What happens this week? It's the Iron Bowl. Obviously, you know, Alabama needs to keep winning to stay, in the race in here. And as we've seen in these polls, too, they already dropped Michigan because they want an excuse to get rid of Michigan. And they already dropped Florida State because of the injury. They want an excuse to get rid of them. So I think they know they're prime for a leap here if either Washington or Oregon drops a game, or even Texas as well. So it gets really interesting. So I think that the game that I would hammer in a blowout victory is Alabama versus playing against an Auburn team that just dropped a game they paid the opponent to play. I wish I had a better feel for either the Washington or the Oregon games here. I guess, you know, Washington almost losing the game to Oregon State makes you feel better about Oregon State versus Oregon, and it makes you feel worse about Washington playing Wazoo, especially after Wazoo's blowout victory over Colorado. And remember when Colorado was good, now they're 4-7.
I wanted to bring that up. I wanted to keep it tight. I failed in doing that today. So did Spaghetti. Hench did the best job of it, of the three of us. But yes, I did want to make mention of the fact, as a reminder, like life itself, football season is not just short, it's also long. Remember the Colorado Buffalo story, long ago that was.
Nothing. The poor Buffs, 4-7 now. Mm. But speaking of long, there is no longer college football story than Cam Rising's college football career. I mean, in Animal House, Blutarski says 7 years of college down the drain. It's a joke. This guy's going to collect Medicare at Utah. It's out of hand. Year seven for Cam Rising.
Last thing, fellas, what spiritually? We've made our picks on Ohio State, Michigan. What's the right thing to root for, Kevin Hench? Give us a word here in Thanksgiving week. People are going to be playing their turkey bowls. Otherwise, by the way, shout out to Dave Damashek. I've left him out in the goat and goat. How about me? USC, UCLA, once again, victory bell. We all came out winners. Why? Because they both wore their home jerseys. Dating back to 2008 when I got Neu Heisel and Carroll on the phone at the same time on my radio show to agree to both take penalties and give our eyes the treat of wearing their home jerseys once again. But that's in the rear view. Hench, what do we root for spiritually? Do we want Harbaugh to win this one, or do we want to see them get win?
Of course not. I mean, it's like, you want... This is kind of a good, this is kind of a perfect win-win for Harbaugh haters, right? If they lose, fantastic. If they win, you're irrelevant, I guess. I don't know. But, like, I think you're rooting, like, you know, fan bases you don't talk about it maybe as much in college. You know, obviously pro fan bases can be pretty unbearable. As I say that as somebody who roots for the Boston teams and regrets it every time I say hi to somebody in a Red Sox hat. But I mean, these Michigan alums are kind of unbearable, right? They're so smug. That book, the Public Ivies, came out when I was in college. And for some reason, the mediocre University of Vermont was on that list. Like, it's an Ivy League caliber school. No, not really. But Michigan, I think they definitely fancy themselves as a Public Ivy. A lot of, you're learning how high end their alums are, you know, as they say, bet, and they're circling the wagon. So the delightful thing would be, you know, an Ohio State victory. And then Harbaugh goes, you know, Harbaugh after, you know, all of talking about loyalty goes and coaches the Chargers.
All right. I guess so. Yeah. And if, I don't know if winning that game enhances his chances of coming back next year. I don't know what to do. Anyway, enjoy it. Enjoy all the people in your life. Hope you get to spend Thanksgiving with them. We appreciate you listening to us, especially this week. We appreciate all the ears. We'll be back, obviously, after Thanksgiving week. We hope you'll check out the -3's 15-minute pregame show on Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern. And of course, before that, be on the lookout for a shortened version celebrating the trio of Thanksgiving games, plus the Black Friday game, Dolphins and Jets. That's going to be a nice addition to things. We appreciate you checking out all the great stuff on the Extra Points Network, and we'll be back after Thanksgiving to get you right for the rest of the 2023 football campaign. All the rest of it, too. In the meantime, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been the thin slice of heaven. Go eat a lot of pie, everybody. Thinking about you, Deeker.